Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Rantoul Press for the week of November 27th. We'll start with some local news. Champaign County decision on cannabis sales not expected until spring. From Urbana. Recreational marijuana becomes legal in Illinois in less than a month, but it may be next spring before Champaign County officials establish regulations for cannabis businesses in the county's unincorporated areas. 2 weeks ago, the county board debated a controversial ordinance that would have prohibited such businesses as marijuana craft growers, dispensaries, transporters, infusers, and processors in unincorporated areas such as Penfield and Seymour, and wound up sending it back to a board committee to hammer out a compromise. The board's Environment and Land Use Committee meeting was scheduled to meet tonight, but the meeting was canceled. The committee chairman, Republican Aaron Esri, said a discussion on a compromise measure won't likely be back before that group until January or February 2020. This week's meeting was canceled due to a lack of a location, Esri said. The room where it would have normally been held was set up for a tax sale Friday, he said. County Zoning Administrator John Hall said there's no immediate rush to take action on marijuana business restrictions before recreational marijuana becomes legal in the state January 1st. I think the reality is no business is going to get their state approval in a very short time, he said. County Executive Darlene Kleppel agreed there's no need to hurry. Some board members want more time to discuss this issue with their constituents, and there's a legal process that will need to be followed once a compromise is reached, she said. People may be panicking because January 1st is coming up, Kleppel said, but there are still a lot of administrative details to work out. Hall said he is already at work on a compromise measure based on comments made at the November 21st county board meeting. What he plans to send back to the committee to consider will be a change in the county zoning ordinance that would essentially prohibit marijuana businesses within the mile-and-a-half zones of communities where these businesses aren't wanted. The other major part of the proposed compromise would be allowing marijuana businesses in unincorporated areas that are within a mile-and-a-half of cities and towns that plan to allow those businesses to operate, Hall said. But he said the county's regulations in these particular unincorporated areas would need to match those established in the communities they surround. Since this would require a change in the county zoning ordinance, Hall said, it would have to go through the Environment and Land Use Committee and the proper hearing process before the Zoning Board of Appeals to give the public a say. By the time all that occurs, it could be as late as May before the county takes final action on marijuana business rules, Hall said. Esri said he could likely live with the kind of compromise measure Hall is drafting, but he doesn't know how board Democrats would respond. Board Democrat Stephanie Furtado said she could probably support a compromise like one suggested at the recent board meeting, that dispensaries be prohibited in unincorporated areas of the county, but other marijuana business be allowed. However, she said once recreational marijuana becomes legal in the state, she also believes people ought to be allowed to do what state law allows. If people want to participate in a legal business, they should be allowed to, she said. Rantoul pledges $5,000 a year to lure IHSA boys basketball tourney to CU. The village of Rantoul has pledged $5,000 a year for 3 years in a bid to bring the IHSA boys basketball tournament back to Champaign-Urbana. Village Administrator Scott Eisenhower said he and Mayor Chuck Smith were invited to attend a community support presentation on the topic. Afterward, they discussed their thoughts with members of the organizing committee. The $5,000 is the same amount the village pledged 5 years ago. This amount is below the threshold for board approval, so I was able to make the commitment administratively and inform the board of our decision to support the bid, Eisenhower said. We believe it is important for us to partner with the organizing committee because bringing in an event like the IHSA State Championships to Champaign County benefits all of us throughout the region. Eisenhower said Rantoul would see some benefit in hotel tax and from those who may choose to shop, buy fuel, or eat in Rantoul during that weekend. He said the village also hopes to someday bid on IHSA state championship events it could host at the new sports complex that will open in 2021, and we'll want those same partner support in our efforts. Meanwhile, the Savoy Village Board has approved a $10,000 per year contribution to a bid to bring the IHSA boys basketball tournament back to the area. The pledge, which is double what the village gave to a bid 5 years ago, comes less than 2 months before Champaign County's bid is due in January 10th, and as other communities are weighing how much to give. It's time that this tournament came back to this community, and Savoy will be a beneficiary in many ways, Village President Joan Dykstra said at a recent board meeting. When the board discussed the matter, Dykstra was excited for the tournament, but initially cautious about pledging $10,000. "I'm not opposed to $10,000, but that's quite generous," she said. "That would be quite a commitment for the village in terms of actual tax dollars." Trustee Heather Mangian questioned whether it was worth doubling the village's pledge, especially since the tournament will be held in a new format over one weekend instead of two. But by the end of the meeting, Mangian said she could get comfortable with pledging $10,000. At Wednesday's meeting, she and the rest of the board voted in favor. Earlier, the Champaign City Council directed city staff to contribute $50,000 annually to the effort, up from the $30,000 it pledged 5 years ago, when Champaign-Urbana lost out to Peoria. Peoria is planning to bid again for the tournament, which has been held there since 1996. Before that, Champaign-Urbana hosted it for 77 years. Everyone present at the Champaign Council meeting voted to move forward with the $50,000 pledge. "I think the economic boost it would generate for our area during a slower time of year is important," Representative Angie Brick said. "And I think exposing people to the University of Illinois and to our community, maybe people who've never visited here or maybe went to school here in the past, but maybe haven't been back in a long time, I think that'd be a great opportunity to get them here. And I also think it would be an exciting experience for those that would get the opportunity to play in the Assembly Hall since it's been renovated." Urbana pledged $5,000 a year 5 years ago, and Mayor Diane Marlin has said the city would probably give at least that much this time around. Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin said the Urbana City Council will vote on the proposal this week. In 2015, Visit Champaign County put together a $750,000 bid, with $510,000 of that coming from donors and private entities, and $240,000 from local communities. While Savoy and Champaign have increased their contributions, Mahomet has decided not to give anything. For the last bid, it pledged $1,000 a year. "We had told them that at this point we're not contributing," said Patrick Brown, the village's administrator. "No reason in particular. From our standpoint, we probably get the least amount of economic benefit from that type of event," he said, noting the dearth of hotels in Mahomet. "And we're looking at reducing our contributions to other countywide agencies." And Tuscola plans to match what it pledged 5 years ago. "Our tourism board met yesterday and pledged $2,000 per year to it," said Drew Hole, the city's administrator. "We would see an uptick in hotel stays, certainly," Hole said, "and then everything that comes with that, shopping and food and gas. The IHSA is expected to make a decision in March about where the tournament will be held in 2021, 22, and 23. Downtown businesses set Hop and Shop. Downtown Rantoul businesses will host the second annual Hop and Shop this weekend. The event runs from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, December 7th. Five businesses will participate: Downtown Thrift Store and More, The Whistle Stop Resale Store, A House of Flowers by Paula, Lindsay Lane Bridal, and Anywhere Anytime Journeys. Register at each vendor to win Downtown Bucks and stop by Anywhere Anytime Journeys inside Lindsay Lane Bridal for a hot cocoa bar. There will also be photo backgrounds along the Main Street areas. Christmas parade set in area towns. Lunch with Santa in Ludlow. With the Thanksgiving holiday past, it's time to get serious about the Christmas season in three area communities this weekend: Rantoul, Fisher, and Gifford. They are holding Christmas parades, while a fourth, Ludlow, will hold a lunch with Santa. In Rantoul, carriage rides, photos with Santa, and stories by Mrs. Claus will follow Rantoul's annual downtown Christmas parade Friday evening. The parade will roll up at 6 p.m. It is sponsored by the Rantoul Area Chamber of Commerce. Parade entries will line up on Congress Avenue, turn left onto Chanute Street, and then left onto Sangamon Avenue, ending near West Sangamon. We are asking all parade entries to fill out a form to have a numbered spot in line, Chamber Executive Director Amanda Vickery said. An MC will announce the floats. Awards will be presented for Best Themed, Most Original, and Most True to Rantoul. After the parade, carriage rides will be available outside of the Chamber office at 120 East Sangamon Avenue. Proceeds will go to a local not-for-profit organization. Santa will be in his workshop, the Belltone Building, for photos. Mrs. Claus will read Christmas stories, and there will be crafts in the workshop sponsored by Walmart, Jill's Creative Expressions, AG Electric, Sheer Excellence, Paula's House of Flowers, Downtown Thrift Store and more, The Chamber, and Triad Shredding. There will also be cookies and a photo opportunity with the Grinch at Downtown Thrift Store and more, located at the south corner of Tanner, Kentucky, and Sangamon. In Fisher, Fisher's Downtown Christmas Parade will be held at 5 p.m. Saturday, December 7th. Participants should line up at the fairgrounds beginning at 4 p.m. The parade will follow the usual route from the fairgrounds down Front Street to 3rd Street and ending at Fisher Community Center. A community celebration will follow at the center with snacks, live music, and Santa. Official photos with Santa will be held earlier in the day from 10 a.m. to noon at K. Darling Photography, 102 Front Street, Suite A. There is no charge for the photo, but participants are asked to make a food or paper goods donation for Fisher Food Bank. In Gifford, Gifford State Bank Christmas Parade and related activities will be held Sunday, December 8th. The event, which begins at 4:30 in the bank lobby, will include live music, hot chocolate and cookies, a visit with Santa, and a lighted Christmas parade. The bank will also be collecting children's hats, gloves, and scarves donated by the community. The items will be donated back to the schools in the communities served by the bank. To begin the event, Zach and Sarah Bensel will sing Noel, followed by the Gifford Grade School Band, which will perform Jolly Old St. Nicholas and Angels We Have Heard on High. The Gifford Grade School Chorus will sing Mary Mary and Christmas Canon of Peace. Kennedy Carrico will sing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. There will then be a group sing of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. In Ludlow, Ludlow Fire Department will hold its annual Lunch with Santa this weekend. The event is set from 11 to 1 a.m. Saturday, December 7th at the firehouse. Lunch will be provided. All ages are welcome. A correction, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, December 7th. Sunshine and Smiles Breakout for annual Share Rescue Open House. An unknown author once said, "Saving one horse may not change the world, but it will surely change the world for that one horse." This could surely sum up the mission of the Society for Hooved Animal Rescue and Emergencies. The 501c3 nonprofit organization has humane investigators who work along with the Illinois Department of Agriculture to investigate calls from people who report possible abuse, neglect, or abandonment of hooved animals, horses, donkeys, and mules. The organization tries to educate owners on how to maintain the health and integrity of these animals as well. Each year in October, SHARE has its open house so that the public can visit these rescued horses and raise funds for its operation. This year's event, held October 20th, was the most successful yet. Some $1,900 was raised by people buying items off the website's wish list to donate. This year's open house had a host of activities. Tickets were available on-site for most activities. There was no charge to visit the horses. Visitors were able to read the stories of each rescued horse on the posters hanging on the stalls. There were also volunteers available to answer questions. Young people enjoyed draft horse rides, pumpkin painting, face painting, and a chance to brush a miniature horse. Many enjoyed listening to the mountain music and Carter family favorites played by the young and the fretless. There were homemade bake sale items such as sweet potato pies, brats, hot dogs, and hot apple cider for purchase. There were new demonstrations and activities. Share volunteer trainer Steve showed how to start a horse under saddle using a quarter horse named Cinco. Mark Merriman, a local farrier, was on hand to demonstrate the trimming of a horse's hooves. Psychic readings were available, and there was the opportunity to win one of four raffle items. One raffle item was interestingly named the Unicorn Poop Raffle. The big event was the horse costume contest and parade. Volunteers pick a horse, sometimes a donkey, to dress up in a costume. The person leading the horse in the parade is often dressed up as well. Open house attendees are asked to vote for who they like the most with dollars they can stuff into a jar designated for each contestant. This year's winner was Sherry Reeves, dressed as Cheese, and her miniature horse Mitzi, dressed as a Ritz cracker. Other contestants were Tina Hansen, as Maid Marian and her two royal draft horses, Jack and George, Debbie Stopcott with Buddy, dressed with spiders in his mane and a rat skeleton in his tail, Patty Seaton, who dressed her horse, Loki Bill, as Aladdin, Kim Theed, who was dressed as Jessie from Toy Story, and her miniature horse, Nick, as Buzz Lightyear, and Emily West, who dressed her horse, Hope, as a unicorn. Tri-County Players to present the Christmas Bus. Tri-County Players will present the Christmas Bus by Robert Inman at Market Street Theater, 120 North Market Street, Paxton. Performances are scheduled for December 6th and 7th, and 13th and 15th. Friday and Saturday shows are at 7 p.m. There will be a matinee at 2 p.m. Sunday, December 15th. It's Christmas Eve, and Mrs. Frump, Sherilyn McIntyre, the director of the Peaceful Valley Orphanage, is planning what she believes will be the most special Christmas ever for her children. She's borrowed an old bus and arranged for each child to spend Christmas with a family in the area. The only problem is she hasn't told the busybodies, Pam Harriet, Carla Latimer, and Tammy Bellinger, on the Orphanage Board of Trustees, who believe Frump has gotten too old and soft to handle the rowdy children at Peaceful Valley. With the help of teenage Thomas, Gareth Latimer, the oldest of the orphans, and her trusty right-hand man, Frump sets off to deliver the children, pursued by the suspicious Sheriff Snodgrass, Greg Harriet, and the busybodies. Along the way, they pick up a passenger, a traveling troubadour, Tom Janowski, who's been on the road trying his luck as a folk singer and is now returning home to his girlfriend Darlene, Lindsay Ostendorf, who may or may not be glad to see him. It's an adventuresome ride, culminating in a Christmas even more special than Frump could have ever imagined. Also in the cast are Heather Meents as the editor of the paper. The cast of children in the orphanage includes Audrey McCoy, Grace McCoy, Iris Latimer, Cole Ostendorf, Gigi Craddock, Geraldine Dunlavy, Jordan Huskisson, Joshua Fox, Sophia Wurstel, Liliana Manriquez, and Piper Siddle. Tammy Bellinger directs, and Brandon Irish is choreographer. The Rantoul Planning and Zoning Commission voted unanimously to recommend the final subdivision plat of Galaxy Way Subdivision. Much of that property, which is bounded by Veterans Parkway to the north, Galaxy Drive to the east, and Pacesetter Drive to the west, is owned by the Village of Rantoul. Rantoul urban planner Chris Milliken said the 29-acre tract is located just northwest of Hangar 1. He said there are no proposed road, right-of-way changes, or utility changes. It would simply be subdividing what was there, Milliken said. There were no lots divided out. He said there is potential to sell off a piece of that property, lots 5, 7, and 9. The focus of the village action is to get the lots platted so those properties can be sold. All of the property is zoned industrial. In other business, the commission was informed that in the wake of Chairman Mike Dougherty's resigning from the panel, it will be up to the mayor to appoint a successor as chairman. The vice chairman is selected by members of the commission. Jones headed the meeting in the absence of a chairman. We'll turn now to the death notices for the week. Kyle DeLapp, 35, of Mahomet, brother of a Rantoul resident, died Monday, November 25th at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. A memorial visitation was held Monday, December 2nd at Morgan Memorial Home, 1304 Regency Drive West, Savoy. Contributions may be made to benefit Kyle DeLapp Memorial Fund, care of Busey Bank, Mahomet. Condolences may be made at morganmemorialhome.com. Rosemary Reiner K., 88, formerly of Paxton, died November 25th at Life's Journey Senior Living in Mattoon. Condolences and memories may be posted at rosemarynightingalek.forevermissed.com. John C. Walden, 94, of Champaign, died Friday, November 29th. Funeral services were held at 1 p.m. Friday, December 6th at Bayer Family Funeral Services, 406 East Pell Street, Paxton. Burial following in Glen Cemetery, Paxton. Condolences may be offered at bearfuneralservices.com. This concludes the reading of the death notices for the week, and now we'll return and finish with local news and opinion. And now a letter to the editor from State Senator Scott Bennett. Thanks for attending Town Hall. To the editor, I'd like to thank everyone who attended the Town Hall meeting I recently hosted in Rantoul. We had a fantastic turnout. We discussed everything from capping insulin costs to strengthening coal ash pollution protections. My role in Springfield is to represent you, and I take that responsibility very seriously. I appreciated your thoughtful questions, and I sincerely hope that you always reach out if there's any concerns over legislation being considered in Springfield. We may not agree on everything, but I will always listen and have an answer. It is through this total commitment of the entire community that we can truly make positive differences in Rantoul and in the state. As always, please do not hesitate to reach out to me if you have any questions or thoughts on how we can improve our community. You can always reach me at 217-355-5252 or senatorbennett.com. State Senator Scott Bennett, Champaign. And now from Brett Rowland for the Rantoul Press, Pritzker not serious about fixing state's pension crisis. Governor J.B. Pritzker's bluster on the state's pension problems is dangerous. Pritzker made it clear he wasn't interested in any solution to the state's pension crisis that would involve cuts to promised benefits. Economic Club of Chicago chairwoman Deborah Cafaro asked Pritzker why lawmakers shouldn't let voters change the state's pension protection clause to control the growing cost of public sector pensions. To even working class me, that seems like a fair way to address the shared sacrifice that we all have to make to get Illinois on the right track, Cafaro said. Pritzker wouldn't have it. He said it wasn't feasible to get such an amendment through the legislature, and if it was passed, it would face legal challenges. There are a lot of things we can do, but anyone that thinks there's a silver bullet in one constitutional amendment, that is not something that you should focus on, Pritzker said. You should focus on the entire group of things that we need to do to reduce our pension liability. That's rich, considering that Pritzker's plan for straightening out the state's finances is exactly a single constitutional amendment to allow for a progressive income tax. From the beginning, Pritzker has insisted that the state make good on its past pension promises. That's a sunny sentiment, but the math tells a different story. About a quarter of the state's general fund revenue already goes to pay for pensions, which state lawmakers have underfunded for decades. That figure is expected to grow. Pritzker can't tax his way out of this problem. Raising taxes to the level needed to pay off the state's estimated $135 billion in unfunded pension liabilities would simply put the state at risk of significantly speeding up the pace of out-migration or cutting services to a level that not even former Governor Bruce Rauner could support. Of course, the other option would be to hike employee contributions, which is probably as politically unpalatable as reducing benefits. Pritzker's approach to pensions would make more sense if Illinois wasn't so far in the hole. The Netherlands, which has what is widely viewed as the most secure pensions in the world, is preparing for the possibility of cutting payments to millions of retirees because some funds have slipped below the 104.2% statutory minimum funding ratio. Yes, for every dollar the Dutch pension funds have promised to pay, they are required to hold 1.04 in assets. Compare that to the teachers' retirement system of the state of Illinois, the state's largest pension fund. The funded ratio of the teachers' retirement system was 40.6% as of June 30th, according to the most recent report. The hole is simply too deep. That depth makes it easy for politicians to bury their heads, but we've seen where that will lead us. Pritzker needs to open his eyes, buck his own party, and force real change if he wants to actually put Illinois on a path to financial stability. And now from Austin Berg. Senate President John Cullerton set to collect $2 million pension. Illinois' second longest-serving lawmaker announced November 14th that he will retire in January 2020, but the departure of Senate President John Cullerton, Democrat Chicago, highlights one example of how pension sweeteners Illinois lawmakers passed decades ago are putting taxpayers on the hook for extravagant benefits today. Cullerton is set to receive more than $2 million in state pension payments over the course of his retirement, should he live to age 85. He will take home nearly $4.2 million if he lives to 95, which is $1.3 million more than he would have received without the special sweetener. Here's how it works. Cullerton's starting annual pension will be nearly $83,000, which is 85% of his final salary of roughly $97,600 a year. For most state retirees, the next year of retirement would come with a 3% automatic pension increase, bringing Cullerton's pension to $85,500 a year. But in July 2021, Cullerton will see his pension checks explode to nearly $128,000 a year, a 54% increase. How? For each year he served at the State House since 2003, when he turned 55 years old, Cullerton received an extra 3% increase to his eventual pension payment. After retirement, all of those increases are then applied to Cullerton's pension as part of his first cost of living adjustment. Should Cullerton retire in mid-January, he will have collected 3% increases for 17 years, good for a 51% pension boost. That will stack on top of his automatic first-year adjustment of 3%, coming to a total pension hike of 54%, according to his pension fund's response to Freedom of Information Act requests. After that, he will continue to see a 3% bump each year. This little-known benefit comes from a 1989 bill sponsored by former Senator Emil Jones, Jr., which allows lawmakers who were elected prior to 2003 to hoard pension spikes. Cullerton, who was House Speaker Mike Madigan's floor leader in the House at the time, was a member of the committee that finalized the bill. It passed both chambers with bipartisan support. The average retired Chicago public school teacher makes back his or her career pension contribution after just 5 months of retirement. The average career employee in the Illinois State Employees Retirement System retires at age 56 and takes home a lifetime pension benefit of $1.7 million, while contributing just over $54,700 over the course of his or her career. Pension reform is politically difficult, but it is possible and desperately needed. This has been Tamara reading the Rantoul Press. I hope to read with you again soon. Have a great day.